This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, not burdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another or despise any beings in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free. Free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Ah, thank you, Venerable. I'll just stop the stranger and over to you.
Okay. So earlier I was just thinking what to talk about tonight, and you know, there's many things that come up and little stuff. But I think we'll start off with a joke, with a funny joke. That's Ajahn Rao. So I don't know if you guys have heard Mullah Nasruddin. He's a famous Persian mystic, Sufi mystic from the Middle East, in the mystic tradition. And one of his story was one night, the Mullah Nasruddin, he was looking for something under a lamppost, yeah, at night. So he was searching for something, and then his neighbor came by and, "Oh, Mullah Nasruddin, what are you looking for? Maybe I can help you." And then so he said, "Oh yeah, I'm looking for my key. I've lost my key." And so the neighbor asked, "Oh yeah, so where did you lose it?" "I lost it in the house." "So why are you here looking under the outside?" "Oh, the lighting is better out here." So that's a joke for you all to start off with tonight. Yeah. So I think tonight's topic would be Sukhino Samadhi Ati. I think Ajahn Brahms mentioned that a lot of times, and it means from happiness, the mind becomes still. So samadhi comes from happiness. So if you're a happy person, you put joy and happiness into your life, whatever you're doing, and then when you sit down to meditate, the mind become still very quickly, very quickly. So, you know, how do you generate happiness? What kind of things we should do in life, or what we can do in life to enhance our meditation? So there's many things we can do. There's generosity and, you know, services that we can do in life, helping with maybe the Red Cross or volunteering at, you know, at the hospital, at the hospice. You know, selfless giving, you know, giving without expecting anything in return, just freely giving and happy to do so. And that brings a happiness of generosity that brings into the mind. You just, you know, I think one of the things Ajahn Brahm said, if you're depressed and you have anxiety or you're really feeling miserable, go out there and do some service. Serve. And that's probably one of the best remedies for depression or anxiety out there. It just gives you a bit of happiness there. Yeah, so generosity. Having good friends, also another one. Like where we're here now, we're gathering with good friends all over the world, sharing Dhamma together. So having good friends to encourage each other, uplift each other, sharing information. But just being together, that also creates a very happy energy. Just, you know, I could see that you guys are very happy every Tuesday that you know, you're coming together and, you know, having little side conversations and, you know, a bright, happy face on the screen. I can see that. So that good Kalyana Mita, a good friendship in the Dhamma, it's very important, very important. And the Buddha said good friendship is, one time Ananda, the Venerable Ananda said to the Buddha, good friendship is half of the holy life. And then the Buddha said, no, Ananda, no. Good friendship is 100% of the holy life, 100%. That's a big statement when I heard that. I was like, how is good friendship 100%? Usually you think, oh yeah, maybe 75%, you know, or 50%, but it's because having good friends, meaning being conditioned by your good friends to do good things. So if you hang out with good people, you're conditioned by them to do good things. Like, you know, me being around Ajahn Brahm, he conditions me by just being around him. Such as his vibe, his character, really influences me and in how I live my life. So I think that's what the Buddha was talking about, the conditioning that we affect each other and one another. That's 100% of the holy life. So it's not to be underestimated. So to be good friends with good people is very, very important. And so that's another aspect of happiness and joy that we can put into our life. Friendship, good friendship, generosity, and also virtue, sila. Not harming ourselves and not harming other people. So that's a brief in, you know, in the five precepts or the eight precepts. But mainly the heart of the precepts are basically just not harming ourselves and harming other people. So if we're doing something like, you know, taking alcohol, you know, sometimes people think, oh yeah, I'm drinking alcohol, but I'm not harming anybody. But you are harming other people. You're harming yourself. If you're harming yourself, your family members, like your parents or your brother, sister, or your spouse, they're hurt by seeing you miserable. You're like, oh, this person, oh, he's not doing so well. And so your parents will be very hurt by seeing that you're harming yourself, taking drugs and alcohol, you know, by doing immoral acts. You're harming yourself. You're harming your parents. You're harming your friends. You're harming your community. You're bringing them down on level. But some people don't really see that. They think, oh yeah, they're separate. You know, I'm just harming myself. That's okay. I can do what I want. But actually, no, you're harming others as well. So that sila, that virtue, is also you know, if you're keeping sila and virtue, you tend to see that you're more happy, that you're a more happy person over a long period of time because you're not harming yourself or other people. So that's another aspect of happiness. Sila, generosity, good friendship. Anyone else can think of anything else that's part of a happiness that we can put into our life? No, let's see.
Well, do please be feel free to answer or put an answer in the chat.
Sure. Yeah, just having that, also the Brahmaviharas, you know, the mudita, joyous, being glad that others of people are doing well, you know. Like myself, I see that my parents are growing in the Dhamma, they're starting to meditate, they're doing well. So when I see that the other people that are doing well in my life, I get very happy. I'm like, wow, you know, wow, there's so much happiness out there. I'm so happy that my friends and family are benefiting from these teachings. That for me being a monk, it actually is, I'm doing something very useful for my family by being a monk. And not just like, oh yeah, he's just escaping life and he's not doing anything and just hide away in the monastery and not being a service to anybody. So that joyous, seeing the goodness in people, seeing that they're growing and happy, also brings a happiness into your heart. So that's one of the Brahmana Viharas, mudita, being joyous, celebrating other people's happiness. And then also the metta, the kindness and compassion for other people, seeing that other people are in the same boat as you are in this world, living life, going through the same process as we are. Growing up, you know, middle aged, and then growing old, and then decaying, and then passing away, and sort of seeing that commonality in humanity, saying like, yeah, even though people might be somewhat different, we're not all that different. We're still in the same boat. Some are richer, some are more poor, or whatever. They might be more beautiful, more ugly, but in the end, we are going toward the same place. We're in the same boat. So seeing that, you have a bit of more compassion for your fellow mankind. So that way, that's the compassion, the kindness also. It lifts the heart up. It makes the heart more open, more seeing the commonality that we have with each other. So that's also another way of opening up to that happiness in the world. And seeing that, yeah, you know, there's the ups and downs in life sometimes. You know, it's not always going to be happy. Things are not always going to go well all the time. That's just part of life. That's just called, Ajahn Brahm says, asking from life what it can never give you. Asking always to have happiness and not suffering. That's impossible. So if we understand that, we can sort of like be more equanimous when times are tough. We're like, oh yeah, this is par for the course. I think I can use this to, you know, better myself. Some wisdom will arise. So, any more suggestions or anything about happiness that we can generate happiness?
Yeah, yes, we have some comments available in the chat here. So I'd like to read them to you.
Sure.
Firstly, what was the Pali phrase you started with? From Ajahn Brahm.
Sure, it's called Sukhino Samadhiati. So Sukhino means happiness. Samadhiati is like the mind becomes still. That's one translation. Sukhino Samadhiati. So that means from happiness, the mind becomes still. That's a Pali phrase. It's in the sutta somewhere. But it was stuck with me. He used to teach that a lot back in, 5-10 years ago. But then somehow, sometimes it comes up. It goes, oh yeah, that's true. Suddenly, how come my meditation is taking off today? And I wonder why. Oh, because I had a good day. I was happy. So the meditation just takes off. So, you know, these reminders, these teachings come into, they're very useful.
And we have some other comments too, Venerable. Gratitude,
oh, exactly. Gratitude towards what we have in life. I mean, sort of like gratitude and contentment sort of go together. If you're grateful for what you have, you'll be contented with what you have. And when you're contented and you sit down and meditate, the mind basically become still leaps into happiness very quickly. So gratitude is very important, actually. I do use that as part of my meditation or contemplation to help the meditation. So instead of asking for more things, like, oh, I could have a better food today, or I have better robe or clothing, say, oh, these are, you know, wonderful, you know, the food that I'm given as a monk is great. It's from metta, from loving kindness that people bring food to for us. And if you're grateful for that, then, you know, you probably have a better meal or a place to live, even a roof over your head. You know, some people don't have that. They're on the streets. We all have food, a place to live, what else, clothing, and medicine, just the four simple things. And if you're grateful for just having the very basic, simple, not anything fancy, and if you can really get into that gratefulness, how people bring that to you or how you obtain that, you're just like really, really, you know, you'll be very happy. Another good quality to develop. And yeah.
And we have also the Noble Eightfold Path.
Oh, the Noble Eightfold Path. That's definitely something very, very, precious. So without the Eightfold Path that the Buddha rediscovered, we would be very big trouble. Without the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, we'd be very confused. For myself, I would be very confused, because before I discovered Buddhism or, you know, the practice of meditation, I was very confused in my life. I didn't know what, I was just drifting along with what general society was going through, you know. Yeah, you're expected to go to school, oh, do good in school, then you'll be happy. Finish your elementary school, then middle school, and then high school, and then university. And then so you're sort of drifting along. People say, yeah, if you do this, I'll be happy. But, you know, you'll be happy, but you never are happy. And then after a while, you're like, wow, what's this life all about, you know? Like, people say, oh, yeah, if you do this, you're happy, you get married, or you get a house. And, you know, you look around, and I look at my neighbor, and I'm like, oh, he has a house, he has a wife, he has kids, but does he look happy? You're like, he doesn't look happy. So that's when I started questioning, there must be something else out there. People telling you that, but it doesn't look very, you know, it's not promising. So that's why I sort of kind of pursued the monastic path. I'm like, let's try something very different and see if it works or not, you know, because everyone else is doing the same thing and doesn't seem to work. So then, you know, when I got into the practice or the Noble Eightfold Path, it's a way out. It's a way of happiness. And without that, without the Buddha actually teaching that, we would be very in trouble, because we don't know anything else from what society has taught us and conditioned us to believe. And some people, they turn to drugs, alcohol, and, you know, entertainment. But even those things, after a while, it wears out. It becomes very, you know, it might be fun in the beginning when you indulge in these senses when you're young, but when you're about 40 and 50, and then these kind of alcohol or drugs or entertainment starts to become, what do you call it, numbing. Like, it's not getting that pleasure when you first when you first start. But yeah, so it doesn't work anymore. After a while, you realize there must be something more than that. When you're young, you believe in that sensual world. You think that will give you happiness. But when you go older, you see the drawbacks of sensual pleasure. It will make you depressed if you indulge in, you know, entertainment, any of the sense pleasures. The more you indulge in them, you're basically borrowing happiness. And then you have to pay it back with depression and other negative consequences. So yeah. So the Noble Eightfold Path, yeah, that's a good one.
Also we have called ethical living.
That's virtue, sila. Keeping, not harming yourself and harming others. Yeah, the five precepts basically. And so we got a few more minutes. So let's go over the precepts. Refraining from killing living beings. refraining from lying, killing, refraining from stealing, killing, stealing, refraining from sexual misconduct, and refraining from alcohol. So alcohol is fairly straightforward. Drugs or alcohol, non-medicinal ones. Killing, that's pretty obvious. Killing any beings. Lying, that's obvious. What else? Lying, stealing, that's a big one. That's the law, it's against the law. And sexual misconduct, you know, that's a little bit more vague maybe for some people. But I think what the Buddha meant is not committing adultery. You know, you have a partner, you don't cheat on them, go with another partner. I think that's probably the main one, but it also can go into other areas. So by keeping the five precepts, in my experience as a layperson, it's just kind of flow naturally. When you first start, maybe you start with just the easy ones, and then eventually you see the benefits of those, keeping the precepts that you can do, and then you want to keep more. You keep this maybe one or two, and then you go, oh wow, I'm a lot more happier that I don't drink alcohol or I don't kill living beings. And then suddenly you go, oh yeah, I want to take on more precepts. I'll stop lying. I'll be more honest. And then I guess up to a certain point when you started meditating more, you even keep not eating in the afternoon, because I found that was helpful for my meditation. And it's not really harmful to anyone not eating in the afternoon. It's just basically to help you become more simple and for meditation to take off more, a bit more restrained, but also keeps your evening from, you know, being busy eating and cleaning up, and just you're so full that you can't meditate. You know, usually when you eat in the evening, you get a little bit lethargic. So, yeah. So that's the sila. All right. So, I think it's almost time for meditation. Is it? Is
that? That would be excellent if you'd like to begin.
Okay. So, yeah. So, sukhino samadhiyati. So, you know, focusing on the positive of your day. So, reminding you what went right in your day. So, I'll turn off the lights here real quick, and so we can do the guided meditation. So I'll start off with the body sweep, like I usually do. So find a comfortable position, a nice chair, on the couch, on your favorite cushion, cross-legged or not, but sit in a way that you can hold yourself fairly stable and still for about 30 minutes, yeah? And so you start off with making sure you're in have a good position, sitting comfortably. And so you start up with closing your eyes, so that way you can tune into your inner world. The inner world, sort of leaving the five sense world behind and tuning into the inner world. Take a moment to just kind of feel your inner world. How are you doing? And so, when you're turning inwards, looking for that quiet space that's already there within, and spend a little bit of time to feel that quiet space. And that's where you center yourself on that. Feeling that quiet, centered space. Centering yourself. And then you move to the body. So see how your body is moving, how it's doing. You start off with your toes and feet, making sure they're placed in a comfortable position. And so it's being kindful to it, giving it some kindful attention. Because most of the time we're not very kindful to our body. So feeling our toes, wiggle your toes. How are you doing toes and feet? And then moving up to your ankles, moving that a little bit, giving it a stretch, relaxing it, allowing it to be at ease, and relaxing it. And then moving up to your shins, up to your shins. How's that feel? Your calves, relaxing that. Moving up to your knees. Usually our knees are very used during the day, very tight maybe. You do a lot of bending up and down, walking up and down the stairs. Our knees are actually quite stressed during the day. If you do a lot of walking and physical work, supporting our weight. So be kind to your knees. Give it extra attention. And then try feeling the back of your knees. That's a spot that's very rarely paid attention to. The back of the knees. And then moving up our thighs. Relaxing that. Moving up to our buttocks. If you do a lot of sitting during the day in the office, you might want to stretch your buttocks somehow. It gets numb after a while. It's too much sitting. So being kind for the buttocks and aligning them in a comfortable way. And moving up to our groin area. And giving it a bit of kindfulness. Moving up to our intestines area, sort of like near the belly button, but below the belly button. Relaxing that part where all the food is stuck there. So giving that a bit of kindness. So you have good digestion. And then to the stomach also. Relaxing your stomach. For those who have stomach problems. Moving up to the ribs. Your ribs area. And moving up to the center of the chest, the middle of the body, relaxing that. Moving up to your breasts and your chest area. A lot of tensions and stress usually resides there. Spending some time in the chest area. Relaxing it. Relax. Sabah. When you relax your chest, you can feel the breathing. It's more expansive. More oxygen gets through there. And moving up the chest, closer to the collarbone, and then to the shoulders. That's where, definitely where all the stress would be. It's very tight. It usually gets extremely tight if you've been stressed. So spending a moment to kind of wiggle your shoulders, kind of relaxing them, giving it a stretch, being kind to it. And then your arms. Moving down to the arms, relaxing your arms, to your elbow, to your forearms, down to the wrist, and to the hands and the fingers. If you work with your fingers and your hand a lot, it might be a little bit stiff and tight. So give it some metta, some kindness. Placing your hand in a comfortable, relaxed position. Allow the blood flow to go through there. Oh, that feels good. Now moving up to the neck. The neck, the throat, relaxing the throat area, the Adam's apple area. Centering your neck where your head is balanced and comfortable, yeah? So your neck is not stiff, it's not tight, you're not controlling it, but letting it hang. Sort of letting your neck hang and balance your head, yeah? Balanced and comfortable. Adjusting it as necessary. Give me a little bit of a stretch. Mm. Now we move up to the head. So feeling your head as a circular object, a ball. Just feel how that's balanced on your neck. Just feel the head. How does that feel? How does your head feel? Relaxing any tensions that you can feel in the head area. Any area, the top part, the back. Any tensions. Give it some kindness. And then you move up to the front of the head, the face. And we start off with the forehead. So relaxing those muscles up there on the forehead. And to the eyebrows. The areas around the eye. Some tensions, if you've been staring a lot at the computer screen, your eyes tend to be very tight around that area. The eyeballs, sort of like move it round and round, circular, in a circular way, move your eyeballs. So give it a bit of a, sort of like a stretch, a way to relax it. Give it a bit of a, moving your eyeballs around and around. A massage, there you go, it's a good way. Massaging your eyeballs. Oh, that feels nice. And then move down to the cheek area. See if there's any tension there. See if you can smile. Kind of relaxes the cheeks. Move down to the mouth area. You can feel your smile smiling, relaxing the mouth area. Your jaws, relaxing the jaws, not so tight, relaxing the tightness in your jaws. Your chin. Inside your mouth, maybe your gums, your teeth, giving it some attention, some caring attention, your lips. These are the kind of places that you don't normally give attention to. But they are important. They do serve a very important function. And feeling the back of your throat, your tonsils area. See how your throat feels. Any itchiness, any sore throat? Kind of give it some kindness to your throat. Relaxing it. Caring for it. Yeah. And also don't forget your nose. Try to wiggle your nose. Be kind to it. Give it some time, see if you can feel the whole body as a whole. Now we did all the parts, now feel it as one whole thing. How does it feel? The whole body. And adjusting any parts that I've left behind that are tense or irritating. Any other parts of the body that are still not settled yet. Give it some attention and care. So, adjusting the body again, making sure that it's comfortable. And now we leave it alone. You park it like a car, leave it. Put it away like a storage box, tuck it under our bed. And just allowing it to take care of itself. Allowing the body to look after itself now. And then we look inside into that quiet, silent place in the mind and center yourself there. How does it feel? How does it feel to be quiet and silent and peaceful? I'm looking for the beauty in that quietness. Looking for the happiness of a quiet mind. Even though some of you, the mind might not have, you might not be able to see that yet. Just slowly, there might be a lot of thoughts going on. You might have a busy day, lots of things going in your life. But there's always that quiet spot. There's always the little peace there. It's always in the background somewhere. So you attend to that part of the mind in the middle. Put that in the middle of what your attention is and allow the busyness to be on the perimeter, not at the center of your attention. But let the peace and quiet be the middle. Let all the turmoil be. Sort of like the tornado or the hurricane, look at the eye of the hurricane and not focusing on the turmoil parts of it. And just stay there and allow that to develop all by itself. The stillness, the quiet. You will slowly start to see the happiness arising. The more still we become, the more peaceful and happy we'll develop. So just stay there and relax. Enjoy. How does it feel? Attend to the feeling parts of it. How does it feel? And if your breath comes up, and you feel the breath, how does your breath feel? If it comes up naturally, the breath gives you an indication of how you're feeling based on how you're breathing. Giving your mind and your breathing some freedom. Say to yourself, the door of my heart is open to you. No matter what you do, mind. You can think about anything you like. I'm not going to try to control you. The door of my heart is open to you. Please come in. Allowing the mind to be expansive, encompassing, freeing, no boundaries. allowing the area of your heart to expand, to be free. Not holding anything tightly. An attitude of forgiveness, kindness, openness, letting go. See the happiness arising, the mind becoming more bright and still. Yeah. Okay, so we're coming close to the end of the meditation. How do you feel? And probably notice the mind has become more calm, centered, less movement, less thinking. Less stress, tenseness, anxiety. The body has calmed down. There's a sense of freedom and happiness. Freedom, happiness. Peacefulness, happiness. Clarity. So I would now ring the gong 3 times. On the third ring, please slowly come out of the meditation.
Relaxing time, Venerable. Thank you. Very, very peaceful. Venerable, would you like to continue with your talk or would you like to take questions and answers now?
Let's give it a little bit of a talk, continuing what I said, and kind of bringing meditation into what we've been doing. So, you know, Sukhino Samadhiyati. Wow, what a phrase, what a phrase, what a phrase. From happiness brings stillness. You know, you can really experience that in you know, today's meditation. You can sort of like, you know, bringing that, you know, kindness, that happiness of the body and allowing that to calm down and putting a lot of attention and kindness into your body. And, you know, a lot of us, we don't, you know, pay attention to our bodies, or we're not really kind to ourselves most of the time because we're just sort of conditioned or habitual, sort of like doing things and thinking about things and sort of not really giving the time that we need as people. And we deserve the time as people to be happy. And we can give ourselves the happiness. We can give ourselves the kindness. We don't necessarily have to look for kindness out there in the world, yeah? You don't have to look for your best friend, but actually you can become your best friend. You can give yourself the happiness. And looking back in my life, I think I learned that kindness to myself and giving that time out, you know, to spend in nature and just hanging out with yourself, getting to know you as you, your own best friend. I remember that did a tremendous amount of happiness in my life. I realized I never really knew who I was. And I was always running, you know, doing things in the world that people were expected of me, but I never really knew what this person here, who is this person, what do they want, what do they need in life? And without giving that free time to yourself, to get to know yourself, to be a good best friend to yourself, it's very important, because if you don't have that happiness, that kindness in yourself, how can you give to other people? It's almost impossible. People expect, you know, to be kind to other people, but if we're not kind to ourselves, it's just very difficult. So giving us that free time, a lot of time to ourselves, and to do what you want to do all your life, you know. Usually it's what other people tell you what you should be doing, but really, if you look inside, you will know what you really want to do in life, pursuing what you want to do in life, instead of like, you know, oh, you should do this, you should get this, you know, education or career or job, but really, you look deep inside of you, you will know what you really want to do in life. What is your purpose? And that's very important, you know, in your life, to look within and to have that time for yourself. And so today sort of like kind of reminds me that to give yourself that happiness, and then that makes life more meaningful for you. That gives you the meaning in life, that stillness, that inner happiness, that clarity, that gives you a more clear seeing of what needs to be done. And it has nothing to do with thinking or, you know, like reading books or any of that. It's just the stillness and the peace of the mind, the centeredness of the mind gives you that information. I don't really know how that works, but most of the time we're just really quiet for long periods of time, then suddenly solutions to problems arise automatically. It just comes up, and it has nothing to do with thinking or trying or forcing, but just out of that stillness and clarity arises a beauty, something very wonderful, some kind of wisdom that arises that you would never expect. You would never expect that could happen. It's sort of amazing. It's like a magic trick or some kind of, you know, So from that happiness, there's stillness, and that stillness reinforces that happiness. And also the wisdom and the clarity that gives you clear seeing what you've actually really been looking for in all your life. You've been told what to believe. Oh, this is what you should do in life. This is what the meaning of life is. But is it really the truth for you? And everyone's slightly different, that meaning in life. And that's how you do it. That's how it arises. Okay. So now I can take questions.
that was very beautiful. Thank you. I'm glad you added that to the evening, Venerable. Yes, indeed. Questions. I had an image, Venerable, I'd like to share with you. I've been trying to contact my friend, who lives in Saigon.
Oh.
And she had passed a comment in one of her talks about riding her motorcycle in the streets of Saigon.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly somebody went through a red light that was very red, that meant about 40 to 50 people had to suddenly put on their brakes.
Oh.
And as she put on her brakes, she sounded her horn and then looked around and realized that no one else was sounding their horn. And so she asked some of her students later why this was the case. And they said, oh, well, that person was obviously in a hurry. I thought it was a beautiful story, so I just wanted to share it.
Yes, it's very humorous and also, you know, some wisdom there to we learn from that. These funny stories.
So is there anyone else who would like to make a comment related to meditation and Buddhism, or ask a question related to meditation and Buddhism?
So I could tell another joke if no one has any. Maybe they're still waiting. Oh, there's Gloria. Okay, Gloria. Oh,
Gloria's got her hands up. Gloria, would you like to unmute?
The other day I was trying meditation that is like the contemplation of death.
Mm.
Because I had never goes into this area before, and it kind of interests me.
Yeah.
And I want to ask, because I was doing that in to deal with my fear, because I thought that may be your soul.
Mm.
Yeah, and then I was trying to do that, and but I just do it one time, but I want to get some advice on that. Would you recommend that to lay people, or like, do you think that it is something that better not go into, or you should do something like to settle yourself down or whatever before you go into that contemplation? Thank you.
Okay. I could share my experience with that. I'm not sure I would recommend it or not, but when I was a lay person and I was going through some anxieties, heavy anxieties about, life and what I should be doing, and it was overwhelming my judgment, because the thinking kept going round and round and round really fast. Anxiety was, over the top. And then somehow I was meditating at the time. I went on retreats and stuff, but I somehow went to the cemetery. I don't know what happened, or maybe, some kind of conditioning when I heard a talk about death or anything, but I think maybe it was just reading Ajahn Chah's stuff where he would hang out in the cemetery to meditate. so I was like, oh, yeah. Ajahn Chah did that, maybe I should, give that a try and see how that works. So I've never been to cemeteries before, and I never, there's always like a taboo saying, oh, it's a bad energy, bad things if you hang out in the cemetery. But then, I took the opportunity to do that in like the spring and summer where it's beautiful, and it's like the cemetery is like a garden. So it's not so gloomy and scary like nighttime. So I was just hanging out there it's like a park, and not many people hang out in the cemeteries because, like Ajahn Chah said, people don't like it. So I was like, yeah, I get the whole place to myself and just walk around, look at all the tombstones and stuff. And I didn't even think about contemplating death, but eventually when you hang out in the cemetery a while, you start looking at the tombstones, yeah? You start, oh, yeah, this looks neat. It looks very old, sort of wander around the whole place. And eventually you start reading the tombstones and start seeing like when people died or what they say about each other. And then you start to see like, oh yeah, this is sort of like the age that people died in that time. But there's also some people that die very young, which surprises me. We don't know why. But some of the sad things that people put on there, my dearest husband or my dearest love, sort of like attachments and memories, and those bring emotions when you read it, because it's real. This is real, real people, real experiences of, how people deal with death. And that's sort of like the feeling arises in you. Oh, wow, life is so, you instead of thinking about life, you're experiencing the death of life. A life comes and goes, and this is what happens to real people. This is not like some book or some kind of thinking contemplation. This is real. You're there in the cemetery. And then some of the pictures I remember seeing is like this couple that there's the before and after photo. So then the married photo, they look beautiful, handsome man, beautiful woman getting married. And then there's the photo where they're close to death. So they're all wrinkly and broken up. And I'm like, wow, this couple, you know, they're so happy together. In the beginning, wow, what, you know, and then, oh, what, this is what happens to people over time. And that just strikes me. I don't know why. It's just, I can't really put it into words. It's just like, this is life. This is real life. This is what happens to people over time. They get married, they're happy together, you know, really beautiful. But then in one day, they will age and wither away. And then all that is left is the corpse. And then there's like, there's you know, the tombstone. And then, you know, memories of what the children say to each other. And it sort of gives you meaning in life. It's like, this is, you know, life. This is life, you know. And, you know, the more I kept looking at the tombstones of different people who died at different times in their life, it gives you a sense of what's important in life. Not in a sense of intellectual or, you know, it's a feeling that you get. And suddenly all this anxiety and all this fear about what I have to do or, oh, it's terrible, suddenly disappeared. It's just like totally gone. And it's like incredible. It's like, what, you know, I never knew about this kind of therapy, death care, you know, death contemplation in a very different way. But it gives you perspective. You hang out in cemeteries and you look at death, it gives you basically, it tells you what is really important in life. Is it money? Is it like getting that job or having a career or, you know, even getting married or having a family? Is that what life is about? But once you start contemplating death, you're going to the cemetery, it gives you a different feeling. It's not anything about I can really describe, but it gives you a different perspective in life. I mean, it gives you like, hey, you know, I better use this life carefully and in a meaningful way that it will, you know, because you know what's going to happen in the end. Real people, you know, they do pass away, they do die, and some of the young people in there also die. And it just gives me like, I don't know, it just gives me a kind of feeling like what I should do in my life, what carefully more, you know, think about what you want to do in your life. And I just like somehow, you know, it just gives you so much meaning, basically gives you meaning in life. Wow, you know, it's an emotion. It's not really like, I don't know how to describe it, but basically it gives you a perspective on this is our life. We only have a certain amount of time to live. Use it wisely. Don't waste it on stupid stuff that you can't bring with you. You can't bring your wealth to you. You can't bring your money with you. You can't bring your family with you. You can't bring anything with you. When you die, you can't bring anything. So that's basically is giving me that emotion. It means you have to let everything go. In the end, you cannot bring anything with you. So what does that mean? What does that give you? It probably reprioritize what you want in life. You'll probably be more spending more time with your parents, with your loved ones, and caring for them more, rather than being busy and, you know, I don't know, doing other silly stuff in life that are not very meaningful. But even though you're gonna die like in a week's time, I think you would be more caring and kind to the people around you, especially your parents and, you know, your family members. And that's what happened to me. I started really spending more time with my parents and really caring for my family at that time. I was like, and you know, that happens naturally. I didn't even think about it until now. So that's what contemplation of death would do for you if you did it in a wholesome way, and not too morbid. And you know, if you're depressed or something, maybe I don't recommend doing that. But death contemplation done in the right way can also bring a lot of happiness and bliss coming up, because you see a clarity of what life is about. And that's good. You know, it's okay if you do it in the right way. But if you go to the cemetery at nighttime and then it's cold and scary, I don't know if that's such a good idea. You know what I mean? Yeah, so it's cemetery is like a park. Yeah. It's not a scary place. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Yes, I think so. One of my greatest fears is to get my priority straight. But yeah. Thank you for your answer.
Yeah, that might scare you into doing the right thing.
Yes, I'm kind of scared of that, yes, but yeah. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you, Gloria, and thank you, Venerable. Nikki, you've got your hand up. Would you like to unmute and ask a question?
I would. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you well.
Oh, lovely, thanks. I can't get my camera to work, so sorry, Venerable. I can't.
Okay, Nikki, just go ahead. Just go ahead.
I'll make this brief. I just wanted, because I went in the meditation when you were talking, you know, being centered and finding that place of being centered. So it reminded me last week I was not centered and I was walking about doing my, you know, in between working, and I fell over. I went over my ankle and actually snapped the tendon in my ankle. And I was walking around next to the road, and I was busy looking around, wondering if people noticed me. I had this thing like, oh, are they looking at me? Do I look cool? Oh, I'm giving it some. And then, whoosh, I went over on my ankle, and I was on the floor, and I was laughing.
Okay.
Because then the thought of when Ajahn Brahm talks about how Ajahn Chah used to say, you Westerners have stupid feet. And I just laughed, and I was laughing at my feet, going, you're so stupid. And then I saw, because I ended up in a hospital in the A&E, and when I went and had my foot x-rayed, and they asked what happened, and I said, so I've just got stupid feet. And then they looked at me, they didn't know what to say to that, and then, so I've obviously had to sit down a lot since.
Yeah.
And because I was uncentered and not at peace, really. I was too busy looking outside of the world, looking outside of myself for validation. So I sat with all that, and I sat with the process of all that. And not that it's necessary, but I liked my response where I didn't panic. I just started laughing, and that is absolutely down to the Dharma and listening to people like you. So thank you. I guess that was more of a comment rather than a question.
No.
So it's just more of a reflection. So yeah. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you for sharing.
Yes, Nikki, that was really, really beautiful. Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to either put a question in the chat or...
Okay, last joke for the before we go.
Last joke.
Okay. Okay, so the same person, Mulla Nasruddin, the Sufi, he's a sort of funny character. And so he was in the Middle East, Turkey. He was going back and forth, smuggling something across the border and with his donkey and then two big, haystacks. So, you know, he would go back into the border and go come back and forth over the borders. But they could never find what he was smuggling. Yeah? So over time, over many years, he was prosperous now and rich. And he moved over to another country in Egypt. And then the custom officer that was previously met him in Turkey... he's no longer a custom officer, so he met the mullah. He ran into him and said, "Mullah, what all those years? What were you smuggling that we could never catch you?" And so the mullah says, "Oh, donkeys." So they were looking for the stuff in the hay, you know. But he was smuggling the donkeys. Okay, so. All right, that's the last joke before we go. And
yeah. Okay, all right. Would you be happy to leave us with a blessing this evening?
Sure. Okay, one last blessing. So for your peace and happiness and on this night, and so here you go. Sabaro govini muto. Sabba santa pavacito, Sabha veramati gando nibuto chatuvambhava sabitiyo vivajantu sabarogo vinyasatu mate bhavan dvantarayo suki dikha yugo bhava abhivadana silisa nichan vada pachayino chataro dhamma vadanti ayuvano sukhang balam.